Hello and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. We actually have some back issues to talk about today. I got a shipment from Reed, my friend Reed, listener to my podcasts. I met Reed, man, it was many years ago at Heroes Con, and he was a listener of Geek Brunch. And I think when I met him, it was still Heath Holland as my co-host on Geek Brunch. But Reed's been listening to my podcast probably longer than anybody that I know of, anyway, that has let me know. He's been there almost since the beginning, and it's cool to have a listener like that, especially for me, a podcaster that doesn't get a lot of like podcasting love like some of these podcasts, but Reed gives me lots of love. I don't think our downloads are near anywhere near most podcasts, but there are a few dedicated fans I really appreciate, and Reed is one of them. Reed sent me some great comic books. And I wanted to give him a shout out. He sent me many months ago a comic book called Sprocket Man, which was a cycling safety type comic book. I keep hearing my phone, and I don't know where it's coming from, but I'll just check my check test message. Okay, it's Barb. But anyway, it's called Sprocket Man. And I had the original comic book because Reed sent it to me. But now he sent me the ash can. And I did a little research on the ash can. And I think the ash can was a second print. And it's basically a hand stapled comic book version of that, which is really cool to see. The one that I've seen is on white paper, and this one is on yellow paper. And I don't know why that is, but it is an awful cool thing to have. So now I really am complete on Sprocket Man, which was just one issue, but it has one issue plus the ash can. And if you get a chance, you can look up Sprocket Man. There's even some CGC graded copies of Sprocket Man. So it's kind of interesting. The other one he sent me, which I don't know nothing about, is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 8. And I think, is this. Yeah, this is of Zeno's Arrow. And I don't know much about this book, but it is from Cup of Tea Studios. I'm gonna look it right up on my database just to see if it's anybody creatively that I recognize. Zeno's Arrow. There's actually Zeno's Arrow and Zeno's Arrow Book 2. So this one I do not know the creator, but its writer is Greg Beatam and Stephen Guygen Miller. And Greg Beatam does the art as well, and he's also the cover artist. And the summary of this is it's found in a cryogenic chamber at the edge of the universe, a wrecked starship. Zeno is the only being of his species. He was rescued by lizards, a race of beings that considered themselves of the highest order of culture. In the intergalactic zoo of civilization, Zeno is treated well enough if he can ignore the lizards' pomposity, I don't even know what that is, and patronizing attitude, which seems analogous with Kipling's Noblesse Oblige. I don't know what that is. But on the first day of his new quarters, after he graduates from a nursery, Zeno meets Clemens, a rodent creature who is a little more cynical about her hosts. The black and white title, which is intriguing plot, humorous secondary characters, and simple yet pleasing artwork. Zeno has a football-shaped, featureless head, while the lizard's appearance seemed to have inspired by Walt Kelly's Pogo in Animal Comics, and then later in newspaper syndication. So, yeah, this will be an interesting one to tackle. Maybe in a future Mike M's Weekly Reads, you'll hear this, or Geek Brunch, if I get a chance to crack that open and see what it's like. I don't know anything about it. The other thing I got that I want to mention before I forget about it is I did a Kickstarter not realizing who this guy was, and was just intrigued by the cover. It's called Devil Bitch, number one, from Bad Girl Occult Press. But this is by Everett Hartogi, I think. Hartso, Hartsoe. And I was like, man, that name is so familiar. And I just couldn't figure out what it was. And I was at the comic store, and I picked up recently an issue of Razor. And he was the writer on Razor. So if you're into the 90s, maybe it was late 80s, and you see a copy of Razor, usually from London Knight Studios, or Razor was published across many different publishers. So, but anyway, that was an interesting tie-in to the Kickstarter, and now I'll be looking for more Kickstarters from him, because I've always been a Razor fan. Back to what Reed was originally intending to send me, and I think he went to his comic shop, and they had like a sale, and he knew how high I was up on G.I. Joe. And I've been talking about G.I. Joe a lot on Retrocast, and I just been discovering like what a glory this book is. Like, I originally came on in IDW time period and loving it with Cobra, Mike Costa, and all the titles that were coming out. And I was still reading Larry Hama's series, which started continuing on from the Marvel series, but I hadn't read much Marvel series other than the first deluxe edition. And I started reading like in the 120s, 130s, and I just became so infatuated with it. So Reed, out of the kindness of his heart, has been seeing me post and being excited about that. It's been sending me some G.I. Joe comics, and these ones are kind of hard to come by, at least if you go to my normal sources, which are Atomic Avenue, eBay, and my comic shop, because they don't have a lot of these in stock, and when they are in stock, they're a lot more than I'd want to pay for them. And lately I've been reading them not as singles, but I wanted to read a lot of G.I. Joe, so I've picked them up in trade paperbacks, and those weren't cheap either, but it came to be more cost effective to have it in those story arcs rather than the singles, and it just made it easier. So I've been reading them in trade, and then I do have a lot of the IDW deluxe hardcovers, but they didn't really go past 100. I think they ended up in 80 somewhere. But he sent me issue 115, 117, and 127. And I think I already read 117. I'm pretty sure I just covered it. Not on a podcast, but I had read it, because it's that Destro Search and Destroy series, which is three issues. And but I didn't have it in singles, so I said, yes, I'd love to have it. And he sent me 115 and 127, so yeah, that's a good, nice pickup there. He sent me a comic book that I don't have called Star Gods. And it looks like Gods is spelled out with a Z. It has like a sexy anime type woman on the cover, so it might be a bad girl. And it's issues 1 and 2 from Antarctic Press. This one being Antarctic, it might be black and white. Kind of like in Gold Digger. I don't know the time period that this was coming out. You know, Antarctic's been out around a while. And then he sent me some stuff that I did own already. Eric Larson's Dart. I don't think this is by Eric Larson. Matter of fact, one of the covers looks like Bart Sears, but it's not. But I might not have number 3's cover. But it looks like it's 1 and 2. And I've always liked Dart. Spoiler, she is dead, apparently. You never know in comic books, but she did die in Savage Dragon, fairly recent issues. I was really surprised to see it. It's like one of those shocking things that happens at the end of the book, you see. Because Dart started working for the Vicious Circle, you know, the bad guy stuff. She was the leader, and now she's dead. But he sent me 1 and 3. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, Reed. I love getting packages like this, and especially things that I don't know about or didn't know they existed. I love getting stuff like that. I know it's not worth a lot of money, but it's worth a lot to me because, I love comics, and the more I can learn about comics that I don't know about, I already know a lot about Marvel and DC, and I'm learning a lot about the Joes, which I didn't pay attention to a lot of licensed properties, and here I am, you know, reading a lot of Shogun Warriors and Micronauts and G.I. Joe and Transformers now, so how times have changed. But thank you. This is an amazing a treat for me. And then I got a package from Aaron Myers. This one wasn't cheap, but it was issues that I keep my eye out. And one of the things that I've been really trying hard to finish, and it's become goddamn really hard, is Silver Surfer. Some of those early issues are just really expensive, but I picked up number 11. These are 15 cents cover price. Number 11, 12, 15, and 18. So I've been working on trying to complete that run. The Disney Plus speculation on Mephisto has gone nuts, and that book is still really hard to obtain. I think it's Silver Surfer 3. And I think I'm missing Silver Surfer 1, but I'm getting close to having a substantial run of that first arc of Silver Surfer. I always keep my eye on for Conan that I'm missing. I have close to a full run, but I am missing still, I don't know, let's just say 60 issues or so. So this was Conan 31, and he had that for sale, and I took advantage of it. One of the things that I also passed up when I was young is Turtle Soup, Ninja Turtles. Didn't have any before, God, even before COVID. It's just like something that hit me lately. And now I almost have a full run, minus 1, 2, 3, 4. Even the second, third, fourth prints are expensive. Of the first run, but I have a good run of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and I was missing a title called Turtle Soup, and I think I'm only missing one issue of this. I have the second volume. This is the first volume, and it has 4 issues, and I think I'm missing 4, and that's it. Out of that original series, I was missing 7, and Aaron Myers had that for sale, so I picked that up of the volume 1. I just recently completed volume one of What If, and now I'm starting to work on volume two of What If, which I only have like five copies maybe of those titles. So whenever I see them, I sort of pick them up. But this one was really interesting. It's What If Wolverine Battled Conan? And there's been several related what ifs, but this is number 16 of volume two. Another thing that I'm really into is any old Silver Age Marvel that I can get, and this one was a good affordable copy of Tales of Suspense number 67 with Iron Man and Captain America. This one has a bunch of Iron Man villains on there that I don't recognize, but it says never before has Iron Man fought so many deadly foes at once. And man, I don't recognize any of them. One looks like it might be a version of the Black Knight, but I don't think so. One looks like the Melter, but I know it's not him. He's got like rays coming out of his chest. It says two new master works from Mighty Marvel, the world and famous House of Ideas. Never before has Captain America been in such dread danger. So that's a second feature. And then I'm always looking to complete my volume one of Amazing Spider-Man. Some of them I probably will never get, but those are usually 1 through 20. Everything else seems like I still can is within arm's reach. And I have a lot of the series already. I mean, there's some books that are expensive, like 300. Got that. Got all that later stuff. But there are some issues that I am missing in the 50 cents and 60 issue, 60 cents. But this is a 15 center, and it's Amazing Spider-Man 78, The Night of the Prowler. This might be his first appearance. I can't remember if it's this one or the one before. It might be his second appearance. But that's pretty cool. And then we got Amazing Spider-Man 213, and he's fighting the Wizard. That's pretty cool. I've always liked the Wizard and his son, who's in the FF, the Future Foundation. And then 240, which features Spider-Man, the JRJR cover, inked by Layton, but it's got the Vulture, Wings of Vengeance, and it's got a big bright sun in the background. 243 is featuring the return of Mary Jane Watson, and plus a major turning point in the life of Spider-Man. And I don't know who that is, but it looks like DeWolf, but we'll see. I picked up a Caliber Christmas holiday special. They've had a couple of these. I don't know if this is volume one or volume two without looking at my database. But this features Anniverse, Baker Street, which I almost have a full run of. Crow, which I've been on a kick of that lately. Dead World, Frost, Fugitive, Gideon's, The Realm, and Street Shadows. All new stories. Been working on pieces of Invincible as I see affordable issues around, and this is 116 of Invincible. I've already read, I bought from Aaron Gore Shriek number 1, 2. I think I have 3. What this I think was the first drawn comic book by Greg Capullo, Gore Shriek number 1. And he continued to draw some of the work in Gore Shriek 5 and 6. So I'm working on those. These are like shock horror books from Fantago. And they're still around. They're doing some reprinted material, and I think they're printing new material. Got Fantastic Four 121. This was an issue I was missing. Looks like to be a really nice copy of this one. This is one of Galactus's heralds, Gabriel. Really nice cover with Silver Surfer coming in, and the Fantastic Four looks like they're defeated on top of a building. I wonder if this guy has like water-based powers. I don't know too much about him, to tell you the truth. I just knew he was a Herald of Galactus. At least I remember him as one. Into the cages, you witless fools, says Doctor Doom. From this day onward, you are slaves of Doctor Doom. All this and Silver Surfer 2. So, in this one, you see Doctor Doom thing looks like he's in bad shape and he's like begging for mercy. Medusa's on the ground already defeated because she was part of the FF at this time. I think this is around the time that Sue wasn't liking Reed, and she took off and ended up being with Abigail Harkness for a while. And Reed was like, "Where the hell's my wife?" And Johnny had the Fantastic Four red costume. Really interesting time. This one I could have sworn I had already bought from Aaron Myers like months ago, and there is a probability that I already did. So this is might be my second copy. I just didn't inventory it, and that would be my bad. But because my database said I didn't have it, I picked it up again. This is Uncanny X-Men 159. So still working to try to complete my X-Men run. Yeah, that falls into another category where I won't probably get like X-Men 1 through 15. Let's see what my earliest X-Men is. But I've gotten a lot of like from Giant Size on. And I've been acquiring a lot of X-Men before that. I was gonna look up what my first X-Men issue is. My first X-Men is issue 1, but it's a facsimile edition. Is issue 16. So that's my earliest X-Men. And then I have a bunch of them in the 20s, missing some in the 30s and 50s. And then once I hit 101, sorry, 102, then it looks, pretty close to continuous. And then the series cuts over from X-Men to Uncanny X-Men after Days of Future Past. And what that means is the numbering continued, but if you look at the indice in DC's or whatever they call them, in the bottom of the page, the title actually changed. It was X-Men, and then it's changed to Uncanny X-Men. And that's why it shows up in two different titles in my database. And then an annual I was missing, X-Men, annual number 7. So that takes us through that. I think I'm gonna have to grab some water because my voice is going, and I wanted to record before my wife got home because I got out of work early, even though I hit a bunch of overtime this week. I've been exhausted. Woof. It's been a hell of a week. A lot of weird stuff happened. But I had a colonoscopy, and I'm glad that I did it because they did find a polyp, and what your polyp either I forget they call them hydro either goes to a hydro something or another, or something that begins with an A or cancerous. So there's three types. The probability of a polyp being andron, I forget what they call it, but it's a something or another, is 2/3 of people that have a polyp is what they call precancerous. And what that means is it might never turn into cancerous, but has potential to turn to cancer. And they remove it right on site if you have a colonoscopy. And they send it in for testing, and that's how I know what type it falls under. And your chances of doing are finding these polyps and them growing are they have potential, but it seems like 5% of the time they can turn, to cancer. So there's just because you have precancer doesn't mean you'll ever get cancer. It just means it has potential to turn to cancer. And they treat it with, like, if you go for a colonoscopy and they state that you don't have to return back for 10 years, that means you had no polyps, or you had a polyp and they fell into that one category that I told you about. They didn't fall into the endometriosis category, which, but anyway, I'm glad I did it, because if you look at for the potential of a polyp to grow into a cancerous cell, it could take about 7 years. And that's why they start doing recommending you start doing these in your 40s, to take care of them early. I started late. I was supposed to do mine in the 50s, and COVID hit, and I kind of sat on my ass for another 6 months after that, and I'm glad I got it taken care of. So it was removed, and then I don't have to go back for a colonoscopy for another 5 years, which is great. And from my experience, what it you don't remember anything. They knock you out. The prep work is the toughest, and then once you've been through it, it's not so bad. The first day you can eat stuff like chicken and really bland things like rice, which isn't bad because it satisfies your appetite and it's not a big deal. The second day is pretty tough because you don't start on that, you don't go on that Mylox or whatever that stuff that makes you shit yet, and you can't eat anything but like liquid stuff. You could have jello, non-colored, like strong colored jello. You can't have cherry jello, but you could have lime jello, and you could have broth, which that was kind of I love chicken broth and like recipes and stuff, but just eating it raw is it almost made me just not want to eat. And then you get like really hungry. That day was really bad. Until I started to get on that stuff where you have to drink to make you shit and clean yourself out. And that you drink with Powerade or Gatorade, and you have to drink about a gallon of it. The gallon of it the day before, and a gallon of it the day after. And I'll be honest with you, once you hit that phase, other than having to go to the bathroom constantly, not a big deal. In other words, you're not as hungry because you have to drink this stuff like within a 2 hour period. But I didn't know what to expect, so I drank a gallon in 1 hour, and then did it the same the day of. And the only thing you have to worry about is getting there. But in a nutshell, what you're doing is flushing the it's like getting an oil change. It's like when they do an oil change, they dump all the old oil out. That's what this feels like. It kind of feels good. It feels cleansing. But then you get to the there, and you're usually like, I could hardly wait to get this procedure done. And the only thing I felt was I felt uncomfortable getting the IV a little bit. It was a prick, and then it felt like it wasn't seated in my vein correctly. But the nurse came in and adjusted it, and it felt better. And then they wheeled me in. You get to wear one of those famous gowns. They wheel you in, and they tell you turn on your side, and then they give you this knockout stuff. And all I remember from there is being wheeled in, and then putting that gas on me, and then says they might you might feel warm in this area, And I remember telling the nurse, I feel this tightness, like I feel like all the fluids in my chest. And it wasn't like where my heart was, it was on the opposite side where my IV was. It just felt like it was getting clogged in my chest. And I said, is that normal? And then I was out. So I guess it was normal, or if it wasn't, and I don't remember anything about it other than being wheeled in there, and they had like this huge poster of a cute puppy on the wall, and then me getting passed out, passed out. And everything beyond that was pretty easy. And then I got to eat, and to tell you the truth, I wasn't like real hungry after that ordeal. I thought I'd be like, oh man, I want to mac down, and I want to. But I just got a Whopper, and I was pretty satisfied because my stomach had shrunk by that time, and I wanted to drink a lot of fluids. But yeah, I look forward to doing it again, because if it's going to prevent me from dying of colon cancer, I'm all for it. Yep. I want to live. I want to enjoy my retirement and read lots of comics. So I've had a couple of people on Facebook tell me, it saved their lives. And I know Barb's coworker had one, and they found a potential cancerous cell. This one they said she needed to go to a surgeon for, but because of that, she had to get a colonoscopy two years back to back. But it could be life-saving, so that's I know it's embarrassing for some people, but if it increased your lifespan, I say go for it. And it's usually your insurance covers it because it's your colonoscopy once you turn 50 is part of life and health maintenance. So while you have insurance, I'd recommend it. And I know probably a lot of you are listening, and you're, oh God, I'm afraid they're gonna stick something up my ass. But if they stick something, you really don't feel anything. You don't feel squat. They do make you sign something before you go in, and they're brutally honest with you. They say, God, I can't remember what the percentage was. Oh, it was 1 in 2,000 people. I guess when they put the camera in there, it could scar or cause some damage to your intestine. And then they have to go directly to surgery. So you're signing saying, oh, I authorize you to give me surgery immediately if this happens. So 1 in 2,000. But it's a low probability in order to save your life for cancer. So. And then they'll just take you into surgery and fix you up. But that's the colonoscopy. And then you feel pretty good for a couple of days because it is like a cleansing. It sounds gross, but it is. It's a cleansing of your. It is like getting an oil change. I even asked Barb if it was healthy to just do this on my own every now and then, just to like change the oil. Every 3,000 miles, should I do the prep? But it doesn't sound like that's like needed, but it felt pretty good to get cleansed out of a 50-year-old body that's never been cleansed like that before. But the better you do in following the rules, I haven't got like a happy face because I had cleaned myself good. In other words, I follow the rules like on the diet and stuff, so when they went in with the camera, they actually took clear pictures and they said, man, you were really easy because you followed the rules and didn't even eat a cracker. You just do what they say, and if you follow the rules, it's easy for them to move in and see everything they need to see. So yeah, I know that's not something you wanted to hear on Mike M's Weekly Reads, but I thought it was appropriate to tell you because it could save your life. It really could. Or prolong your life if they find something. And if they don't find any something, great. You don't have to go back for another 10 years. But, oh well. And now I think that I've grossed you out, and you probably skipped this. What, like, when's he talking about comic books? But I think I'll go see if I have any questions. And if I did a good job, I've bookmarked these. So, my first question is from Dallo Spicer, and it says, "What are your top five comics in your collection based on emotional connection, not value?" And I didn't prep for this, so I'm gonna do this off the cuff. And the weird thing you'll know is I don't remember issue numbers, but I remember covers. So that's what I'm gonna see if I can find real quick. So the weird thing is you're gonna hear a lot of comics. People know me for being a DC fan, but I think a lot of things that put an impression on me were the majority it was Marvel. But my first one is easy because this is my go-to comic. This is what helped me become a hardcore collector and fan of comics and realize that there was a lot of continuity and a lot of characters that I needed to read up on. But it was The Defenders, number 24. And I picked this one off the shelf, and it kind of changed my life in terms of how I felt about comics. But I was captivated by the cover. For one thing, I had two devil characters coming out of the screen. I had Daredevil and the Son of Satan. So coming to the rescue of the Defenders. And I briefly knew about the Defenders, but what I knew is the Defenders had Hulk and Doctor Strange. And in this one, Luke Cage is even in it. So I had the Sweet Christmas, and I love Luke Cage in his costume, and Nighthawk, Yellow Jacket was another character that was in it who visually became really appealing to me. Like, when Yellow Jacket showed up, I was like, oh my God, that's one of the best costumes ever. It had Valkyrie and Doctor Strange, and all the defenders were captured by the Sons of the Serpent. And you're like, how did the Sons of the Serpent fight the defenders? Aren't they a bunch of just racists with technology? And don't confuse them with Hydra. These guys are like Nazis with technology. They hate like nobody's business. And that sort of blew my mind. And then when you have the son of the devil coming to the rescue in the chariot, how the hell could you like not be blown away, you know? Yeah, this was a comic book that will always be one of my go-to to discuss about what why it had art by Sal Buscema, a cover art by Gil Kane and Steve Gerber. And when I got this comic book, I didn't know Steve Gerber, Sal Buscema, or Gil Kane. I never paid attention at this age to 1975 who did what. I didn't care at that age. I was very young, and all I cared about was the story and the art. And I was blown away. So that was one issue. My next issue is a Flash issue, and it's also a 20-cent issue. And this one I'm going to have a harder time finding. Like, I remember the cover, and I remember it's 20 cents. So I have to go near that era and kind of fumble around until I see it. So it's before two. It's around 220. bugs me that I didn't do this ahead of time. But the cover is very iconic to me because it takes place in the Wax Museum, the Flash Museum, and now I can't find it. I'm still in the 12 cent issues though, and then it had a few 60 cent giants, 25 cent giants. That's still 12 cents. I gotta move forward. See, 188 is a 12 center. I gotta pick up 188. I do have all every Flash since 1973, including all volumes, but there's a few of them I still need to get in this the 180s. And see, 199, 198 is 15 cents, so that's still too early. Maybe I'll just describe the cover and find it later. But I'm already at 218. Maybe it was a 25 cent issue, and that's why I'm not remembering. Getting close. If I'm in the 30 cent issues, yeah, I don't know. I always have trouble finding this cover, and it drives me nuts. But I remember it being 20 cents. But what it has on it is Heatwave, the Pied Piper, Captain Cold, and I can't remember who the fourth one is, as wax figures, and Flash is lying in the middle of the floor. And the curator comes in and he that I remember that cover, but at that point Flash, oh, I found it. Ooh, it's Flash 234. It was a 25 cent issue, and the curator of the museum comes in. Oh, I should have known the fourth one. It was Captain Boomerang. I knew it was the big ones. Heatwave, Captain Cold, Pied Piper, and Captain Boomerang. And the curator runs in, and this is what blew me away, is at this time Flash had a backup of Green Lantern. That was awesome. So you get Flash and Green Lantern. But you had Flash and the curator walking in and says, "Impossible. How could the Flash be struck down by wax statues of his deadliest foes?" And this comic book blew me away. 234. Golly, sorry it took so long. It says it's the first appearance of DC Sabretooth, but it is one of my favorite Silver Age slash Bronze Age writers. And that's Kerry Bates. I loved Kerry Bates with the Dennis O'Neil backup from the Green Lantern. The first story is drawn by Irv Novak, and the Green Lantern story is Dick Dillon. But this is another comic very influential on me, realizing how much I love the Flash, and very impressionable to me in terms of character to say, if there's a Flash comic book coming out, I want to get a Flash comic book. And I've been pretty good about never stopping Flash. I've had sometimes I've had to financially, but always going back to fill in what I love about Flash. And this comic that I have was well read. It's VG, not because that's how I picked it up off the shelf, but it's VG because I wore that comic book out on my own by reading it a gazillion times. So that was a very influential comic book. And it's tough to come up with my top five, but I remember the other one that blew my mind was a DC book. And it was a Justice League series one. Oh, Justice League of America. I forget. If you go to Justice League, that's 1987. That's the McGuire years. Justice League of America, Volume One. And this one, I think, was a 60 cent. It was the satellite era, and it had Earth 2 heroes in it. I should be getting close. This was one of those yearly crossovers. I'm going through some great covers here. I wish you guys could follow me along on my journey as I look at like 195, which had the stars the Justice Society again, and they're crossing out Earth One and Earth Two heroes as like the Injustice Gang. This one might be tough. It's around 181. I remember this. This 181 is classic. Where Green Arrow says, "I'm tired of playing second fiddle to all you so-called superheroes. From now on, you won't have Green Arrow to kick around." This was very iconic to me. And I'm probably not going to find the issue that I want to find. But I'll tell you what it is about. And I can't remember if it's a 40 center or a 60 center. That's the problem. Oh, I found it! It is Justice League of America. It's weird because some people remember the issues. Like they'll say, "Oh, that's my best issue." I just remember the cover. It just like blew my mind. I picked this one off the shelf too. This was just to give you a date in 1979. This was picked up off my drugstore. Same with I think the Flash one I picked up. At a I don't remember, but it was next to like a TGY next to my grandparents. It wasn't near where I lived, but where my grandparents lived, and I picked up that issue of Flash. This one I picked up at the drugstore. There was a drugstore near our TGY, by my house, within walking distance, biking distance, and I used to go there. I didn't have a lot of money at the time, but when I got some change and I did some chores, and what would I want to spend it on is comic books. And this 40 center blew me away. It had every superhero in DC that I've ever wanted to see. It has the Justice League and Justice Society together again. And Flash is holding this piece, and he said, "This piece of metal holds the clue to the identity of his murder." And then Green Lantern says, "If you don't find the answer, more superheroes will die." And on one side of the dead guy who's covered with a white sheet, there is Earth 2 Hawkman, Dr. Fate, Huntress, Flash Barry Allen, Jay Garrick Flash, Hal Jordan Green Lantern, Alan Scott Green Lantern. On the other side of the cloth is Red Tornado, Superman of Earth One, Batman of Earth One, Power Girl of Earth Two, Zatanna of our Earth One, and Hawkman of Earth One. So in terms of like duplicity, you have both Flashes from Earth 1 and Earth 2, both Hawkmans from Earth 1 and Earth 2, which that one you don't see too much, and both Green Lanterns. And yeah, this was a hell of an issue. And I'm going to spoil it a little bit for you. The character that they're mourning the death of is Mr. Terrific, Terry Sloan. So, and I was just blown away because there were so many characters I didn't know, and and then so many characters that I already love, like the Flash and Superman and Batman, and seeing all these, Earth 2 versions of them just is mind blowing. Love this comic book, and always kept an eye out for Justice League, just like Defenders. Lots of heroes for your dollar. The next one I'm gonna jump to is Fantastic Four, and you're gonna think, well, you've probably been reading them for a while, but I didn't care too much. I had saw the cartoon with Herbie, and I've never was a huge Fantastic Four fan. I had a few comic books in the 20 centers and around the 25, 30 cents. I didn't have a lot, but I'd buy them occasionally until John Byrne came. And when John Byrne came, it was around the 60 centers. And I'm looking for him now, but it's easier to pinpoint. And it's a very iconic cover because it's a Galactus cover, and it has a bunch of heroes. You'll see that I'm drawn to covers with a bunch of heroes. I probably passed it already. Nope, I think this one's a 60 center. So I'm gonna keep going. It's white, if I remember. Galactus is in the center, and then you have a bunch of heroes. Man, John Byrne did it a lot. He had a long stint on the Fantastic Four. Well, there's Terax, so I'm getting close, because the Herald came first. Terax. Fantastic Four, 243. And I'm sorry that you're having to hear me click through this to look at the covers. I know the covers by heart. I don't ever remember the numbers, and I still won't. I don't know why that is, but the brain doesn't work on the numbers, but the brain is ingrained with the image. And this was written and drawn by John Byrne with cover art by John Byrne. And this was Galactus versus Galactus. And I had seen Galactus before in some Fantastic Four, but once I read this, I became a John Byrne. Like, this is when I started to recognize art and when I started to recognize creators. When I saw this art and this story, it made me pay attention to creators. John Byrne was the first one that I actually realized, hey, there's a person behind this pencil who's writing this story. Before that, I didn't care. And time frame, this was 1982, so I was in middle school. And I wanted, this is prior to me, just prior, maybe 2 years prior to me discovering a comic book shop. But maybe it's 1 year. It's pretty damn close. Because in that middle school year is when I met my friend Mike. And I went over to his house. I walked over to his house one day. And I don't remember why I went there into his room, but I saw these boxes and I'm like, what the hell are these boxes for? Why do you have boxes here? I didn't know a comic box existed. And he opened them up and I was like, oh my God, there's storage for comics? What? Why do you have plastic on these bags on the comic books? What the hell's going on here? I didn't understand what was going on, and I saw this, and I was thumbing through these comic books, and I said, Where did you get these? I've never seen them. There's like Marvel Fanfare, a bunch of other books. I was like, they never get these at the drugstore. What the hell's going on? Like, where did you get these? I want in on this secret. And I remember him telling me Dawn's Paperback Bookstore. And I had my parents take me there, and then it was all history from beyond that. But there's a couple issues I bought off the spinner rack this year that turned me on to like a whole world of continuity and back issues. And here's where things started to go nuts because I knew that back issues existed because there were comic shops that didn't exist at the drugstore. They threw them out before you could look at stuff. Before there were old issues, they gave it a 3 month year life if you're lucky, and then it was in the trash if it didn't sell, and then they'd get refunded money from the publishers or distributors that distributed the comics. I didn't know what happened in this direct market, but I was like, oh, there's Fantastic Four stories and there's Heralds of Galactus, and I was like, ah, this is awesome. I need back issues. And that is one issue. So I talked about, what did I talk about so far? Defenders, Flash, Justice League, Fantastic Four. I want to do two more. The other ones that like knocked my socks off, and these were middle school too, are Hercules. I think it's volume one. Yes, Bob Layton, writer and artist. Hercules, this is when miniseries from Marvel started coming out in 1982. And Hercules to this day is one of my favorite characters. I even have a statue. The biggest statue I have, there's two statues that I have that are big. They're like, this one's like bigger than 12 inches. It's like 15 inches. It's a Hercules statue. The other one that I have is a Flash statue fighting. He's fighting Gorilla Grodd, and those are the big statues. And I have a lot of full-size statues, like DC Cover Girls and a bunch of other ones. Colorado Antonio is calling me, but I don't know who the fuck that is, so I'm not gonna answer it. And I'm gonna get something to drink, 'cause Michael John is thirsty. And I'm gonna go with some mango, pineapple mango drink. And I think I'm gonna kill it. Celebrate Friday. And by the time you listen to this, it'll be a week or two after, because I still have one of these in the can. So Hercules, this Bob Layton drawn comic book, knocked my socks off in 1982, the year of miniseries. And the other one, also a miniseries, came out almost simultaneous with this one. And it's Wolverine. This one, not the ongoing, but the four-issue miniseries by, I think it was Claremont and Frank Miller. What is it under my database? Limited series. Very iconic cover. It has Wolverine. His claws are popped. His mask is down. And he's got one finger like saying, come at me, bro. Come at me. Chris Claremont and Frank Miller in this miniseries blew my mind. And it was the first time that I actually tried. I asked the drugstore lady. I said, Miss Drugstore Lady, I don't remember her name. I said, I don't know how comic books come in. I don't understand how they come in. I don't know how you get them. But can you please tell me when you stock them? And I can't remember what day she told me, but she told me. And I swear, after I learned that date, I was at that spinner rack every week looking for Wolverine and Hercules. And believe it or not, I managed to complete a mini series, which I've never been able to do on the spinner rack because I never could get there in time or they wouldn't have it. I completed Hercules 1 through 4 and Wolverine 1 through 4 off of the spinner rack at the drugstore near my house. Pretty incredible feat. Read these multiple times. What you'll say is a lot of stories you talk about Sergeant Rock and how you got into war comics early on and you traded away. There's been a lot of war comics in my life, but they didn't change my life. I loved war comics because at the time, army men were big in terms of playing, like with friends and stuff. You'd play army men. Or you'd pretend you were in the army with machine guns or whatever. But Sergeant Rock and GI Combat were real big, and but in general, not like any specific issues. It was just like buying comics and trading comics with my friends because we were into war comics. So that was another influential thing that was in there. There was a Marvel team up, and I think this one's John Byrne too. God dang. This is a fun question because I could probably do another 10 hours of this stuff. But Marvel team up. This one was before these two issues for sure. And I just have to look at John Byrne and I'll find it. So there was a. Oh God, there was. These were some good issues of Marvel team up. But I'm looking for. I wish there was a feature where I could just hit the covers on this. This is gonna be another bastard to find. But I know the cover. It's got Yellow Jacket and the Wasp on the cover. And Yellow Jacket looks dead. And it might be another 60 center. I might have passed it. I probably passed it. I could have sworn this issue was a John Byrne issue. Ah, but there's a double issue with this, and I never had the first part. I only had the second part. Maybe it wasn't John Byrne. I should just look up Yellow Jacket appearances. Marvel Team Up Yellow Jacket. See if it shows up. I'm gonna Google it. Marvel Team Up Yellow Jacket. Yep, sure enough. Images, and if I zoom in on it, because of my old age, it's 59, so I was way off. I was at 59. I thought it was earlier, but maybe I'm off by John Byrne too. It is a John Byrne drawn issue. It's Chris Claremont and John Byrne. I was right. With cover art by Al Milgrom. This issue, they fought a character, and I can't remember his name, but he was part Human Torch, part Iceman, like merged together. And in this cover, Spider-Man is holding back Wasp, and he's saying, "No, Wasp, no." And she says, "You can't stop me. My husband was murdered right before my eyes. I'll avenge him or die trying." And Yellow Jacket's on the ground. And I saw this cover and I was like, "God dang, this is awesome." And I never found 58 until I went to Don's paperback bookstore. Oh, maybe it was the no, it was the Aftermath in 50 in 60. Because then it was Marvel Team Up featuring Spider-Man and the Wasp. And the villain was called Equinox, and he was like half Human Torch, half Iceman, and he called himself Equinox the Thermodynamic Man. And I didn't find issue 60 until like I think it was a decade later after I read the original. But so just to give you a time frame, 59 was 1977. So I was very young. Star Wars was coming out. And it wasn't until like 1987. No, it was before that. Maybe I'm exaggerating. It wasn't 10 years. It was probably 5 years that it took me to track down issue 60. Because it was before I graduated high school, but I finally tracked it down. And I never did the mail order thing. I probably could have done a mail order and have tracked it down. No, I did it the hard way. I looked at used bookstores, and I didn't even, at the time, I didn't even know there were other comic book stores. I didn't realize there were like four. But I always waited for that one shop to get it until I went from Don's. I don't know why I left Don's. Maybe it's because it was a bookstore. It was Don's paperback used bookstore, but they also sold comic books. And I found a store called Nostalgia that it turned into Tall Tales on Wyoming, and that store became my go-to until I realized that I had these pull lists, and anytime anything was valuable, I wasn't getting my books. Made me angry! And then from there, I went to Doc's News, which was near the base, and that was my after Doc's News. I think that's when I moved to Colorado. So I think Doc's News took me through all the time until I moved, got a job, graduated college. And I did do the Comic Warehouse sometimes, which was across from the university. They had two stores. They had one there, and they had one on Manal, I think. I think that one still exists. But I know they sell on eBay, the Comic Warehouse, New Mexico, Albuquerque, New Mexico. But anyway, that was a fun question. And I can keep on going on, like on influential books. Because I remember a lot of them. But they created a monster. The original one that created a monster was my dad, because I wouldn't have cared about comic books. But my dad would take me to the dump. You know, who'd let their kids search around in garbage? But at that time, you didn't worry about, oh, are these busted batteries in the dump, you know, and this trash and been smashed and you're gonna have acid on you. You didn't worry about that shit. You just looked for stuff that was thrown out. And in this case, it was boxes of comic books with covers torn off, and taught me how to read, you know, like at five. And I beat the hell out of those books. Those coverless comic books, I read and read and read, and they taught me to read. And from that point, anytime I went to a drugstore and there was a cover, I would try to buy it. I would. Or I'd beg who was with me to get me a comic book if I didn't have my own money. A lot of fun. That's where I'm gonna leave off with it. And then I'm gonna see where I left off on the comic books. And I'm going to check my text real quick to see if Barb's yelling at me saying, do this or get something ready or I'm coming home. Well, that's good news. Talking about colonoscopies, her coworker got the clean bill of health after that cancerous incident or precancerous incident. So she doesn't have it as good as me, where I get to wait 5 years. She has to go back in 3, but that's good that she didn't have it reoccur. Like, she had a more aggressive cancerous cell that they were worried about. So that could have saved her life, because the interesting thing about her is she's not 50. And she just wanted to get it early, 'cause she heard the earlier the better, and she had it early, and they found this. So imagine if they let it wait, what it could have done. But anyway, that's good news. So we're gonna get back to the books read on June 7th through June 13th. There was only a total of 10 comic books. There were 7 Marvel and 3 DC. We'll start at the bottom. They're all 4 out of 5s. We have X-Force number 11 through 17. This is the current run. The Krakoa years. But this the team tries to track down the Russian organization that has Kid Omega and is grafting him. So there's this anti-mutant organization that is really against mutants, and they originally they killed Professor Xavier early on, 'cause they grafted Domino's skin to their body, which tricked Krakoa, because Krakoa has the defin you know it's defensive, as no human can cross into Krakoa. You can't get on it. Matter of fact, Kitty for some reason couldn't get onto Krakoa for a long time. But they took pieces of Domino and grafted it to the skins. They skydived on the Krakoa, killed Professor Xavier, and now they have Kid Omega, who's an Omega level mutant, very powerful. And the Beast thinks that Omega Red and Colossus have been planted on Krakoa for malicious reasons by the Russians. So he has Jean invade his mind. Beat is kind of like, in this era, is very. You don't root for him so much, because he's doing a lot of tricky things. And he's always been the smart one, but he's always been. I don't know. He's always had this dark side to him. He's the one that brought the X-Men kids back from the. He wanted to change the past. There are also several issues of X of Swords, which are pretty much lost on me, because when I read them, I didn't try to read the books across the events. So I didn't read like the prequels and then follow it from issue to issue, from title to title. Matter of fact, by reading it this way, I realized, man, if you really are just in on one title, they really do F you. Because you're going full gear on the story, and all of a sudden, we pause for this intermission, but you're going to get this now. And I guess I never noticed it before, because I usually read the entire thing. We have Teen Titans Endless Winter Special number 1. Because Black Adam lost his cool. The Frost King lost his family just when they were getting him to calm down, and this takes place in the past. This is telling the past Justice League story, like the first Justice League, which featured Hippolyta, Black Adam, a version of Swamp Thing, but not the Swamp Thing you're familiar with, a historical creature that looked like Swamp Thing from the Green. Viking Prince, and there was one other, and I'm not gonna remember it, but That was your Justice League. The Titans are feeding the homeless in Titans Tower during the storm, and they go help bystanders on the bridge. The Justice League shows up, and Flash wants to have a meetup with Hippolyta. Cyborg, Donna, and Flash head to Themyscira, and that's odd because, no man can go on Themyscira, but here's Flash that Barry is going on. Justice League number 58, which is Endless Winter. The Frost King is headed to the Arctic Circle in the 10th century and face off against Wonder Woman and the Amazons, and Black Adam redirects him in the direction of his family. In the present, John Stewart saves a family and then rescues the father from Star Labs. Detective Chimp notices Frost King is attacking Star Labs. A Frost King invades the Hall of Justice, and John and the Justice League stop him. They see it is not the Frost King, but a duplicate ice monster. So that was cool. Then we have Justice League Dark, number 29. Wonder Woman and Flash go to try to contact Swamp Thing for help. The Justice League Dark brings the Viking Prince, and they take part of Swamp Thing and make Viking Thing. They merge him with Viking Prince, who died in the past, to stop the Frost King in the past. Now the Frost King's loose because of Stag, Sebastian Stag, who's the son of Simon Stag. And the brother to the sister who is with Metamorpho, Sapphire. Sometimes I have to talk myself through all the names as I get older. There's some great flashback sequences with Hippolyta, Swamp Thing, Viking Prince, who makes the sacrifice to take out the Frost King in the past, and Black Adam. So there were four characters. There was Hippolyta, a Swamp Thing, a Viking Prince, and Black Adam. That was kind of like our original Justice League. So that was a lot of fun. Those were all 4 out of 5s. We're then going to get into the week of June 14th through June 20th. There were two movies slash TV shows. The 4 out of 5s, I started watching Star Wars Clone Saga season 4 and Bad Batch. This is just me continuing with them. They're both 4 out of 5s. The Clone Wars, I had already seen part of season 4, but some of it was familiar and some I just didn't remember. So I started with season 4 because I know I had watched 1 through 3. And now I'm in season 5, and I'm almost getting to season 6, which is the final season. But there were a total of 29 comics, 21 Marvel, 8 DC. I'll start with the 3 out of 5s, which means I liked it, but they didn't blow my socks off. Batman Fortnite 4 and 5. Batman and Catwoman and Fortnite characters have to team up with Dark Deathstroke to try and return to their worlds. The Fortnite characters get back, except Fish Stick dies. That's a Fortnite character. Pretty iconic looking Fortnite character, by the way. Deathstroke, Batez, Batman, and Catwoman. This was around the time that I was on vacation. I was in Breckenridge, spending a week with my brother. He had a timeshare up there. We had three apartments lined up room to room to room. So my brother had one room, his family, me and Barb had another room, and my mom and dad were in another room. Oh, there was 4 bedrooms because then there was his sister-in-law in the other room, and her husband and son and his girlfriend. So there was a lot of us there, and I wanted to read these so I could give the codes to my nephew who plays Fortnite. And I tried to read him these comics, and it was like a brutal torture to him. Like, he recognized some of the characters, but he just wanted the codes. He didn't want to read the comic books. So I ended up trying to read them to him and then giving up. 'Cause he was like, "Are we done yet? Are we done yet? Are we done yet?" And I'm like, "Oh God, I'm gonna just read this later at night." And that's when I read it. And then I gave him the codes: Superman, Red, White, and Blue, number 1 through 3. This was read for my other podcast, DC Spotlight, with Kyle. And this was fun to see. Just all kinds of different creators that, independent creators, popular creators, take their take on Superman. I scored it hard because there were some stories that I felt were 5 out of 5s. There were some that were 4 out of 5s, and there were a lot of 3 out of 5s. But I felt like, in terms of an entire package from issue to issue, it felt more like a 3 out of 5. Even though there was some things I loved and some that I thought were okay. We're gonna get to the 4 out of 5s. We have Wolverine number 10. Wolverine and mercenaries rescue Maverick. Maverick was a mercenary. I think he belonged to Six Pack back in the Cable years and the early X-Men mutants when Rob Liefeld and all those characters were. Creators were taking off. Silvestri was on X-Men, and Wolverine takes Maverick to Krakoa, and it looks like he is working with the woman who was the head of the auction in Madripoor. They were auctioning off things like Wolverine's hand. I don't know what that was. It looked like a fake claw, but there were like weapons of heroes or pieces of heroes. This was an auction for villains. Hellions number 10. Arcade has the whole team in Dreamscape thanks to Mastermind and is toying with Mr. Sinister. We have X Factor number 1. This is the new series. We have Northstar wants to find out what happened to Aurora and has to work with a new group of X Factor to find out if she is dead so she can be resurrected. The new team is formed to find potentially missing or dead mutants from Genosha so they can resurrect them. Like, if they oh, that character's dead, let's resurrect them, that kind of thing. We have X Factor number. Oh, I already talked about that. We have Icon 2 and 3. We learn that Rocket is pregnant. Icon and Rocket might be dealing with a corrupt mayor who may have caused the Big Bang and caused the superpowered individuals to get powers, and all the deaths that happen in the Big Bang might be related to what happened to the mayor. Suicide Squad is the final 4 out of 5, which is number 3. Amanda Waller wants the team to go after Bolt, Peacemaker. Has his own agenda, and I think Superboy also has his own agenda. This is a lot of fun, and we lose another obscure villain, the Keymaster. This Keymaster is not the key that you have as a Justice League villain. This is a different villain called the Keymaster. So, on to the next. Marauders 1 through 18. This is by far, and I mean with all of even the Hickman book X-Men, my by far my favorite X-Men title. It feels like the X-Men when I started caring about the X-Men, and I've told this story many a times that I have there are two groups that I never got attached to, but my brother collected and I never did. Well, I guess there's G.I. Joe, but that there's a third. But one was the X-Men, and the other, well, he collected Team America too for some reason. The X-Men, and what was the other one? I lost it. But it was the X-Men, and the Marauders reminds me of that time period of the X-Men, because I would read sometimes his comics. But a new group is formed to protect and retrieve mutants who can't get to Krakoa, led by Kitty Pryde, Kate Pryde. Let's not call her Kitty anymore, for God's sake. With Storm, Pyro, Iceman, Bishop, Sage, and it's run by Emma Frost. Emma Frost makes Kate the leader of, and the Red Queen. Sebastian Shaw resurrects his son and tries to kill Kate and Lockjaw. Initially, she is dead, and they can't resurrect her because Krakoa always seems to reject her. She was the one mutant that couldn't go on Krakoa, and they never figured out until she died. She is resurrected when Lockjaw returns, so maybe there was some kind of emotional thing that needed to be there at the same time that allowed her through. I don't know, but she had to be resurrected. There are so many great stories, and some of my favorite X-Men are on here. Even the X of Swords was the best of the tie-ins, as Storm tries to get the sword from Wakanda, and they don't want to give it to her until T'Challa comes back. Emma and Kate get back at Sebastian, and Lockjaw takes his eye, so now Sebastian Shaw has a patch over his eye. There is a group of small kids who team up with the Chinese woman who imprisons her husband, and Bishop and Kate have to rescue the old rich man. Really cool series. I really like it. I gave it a 5 out of 5. So that's the only 5 out of 5 so far. And the last week that we're going to talk about this episode is June 21st through June 27th. Scroll down to the bottom. The things that were watched were Shadow in the Cloud. This was kind of like a heavy metal movie, in terms of it was a World War II. They were on, I believe, on a B-52 bomber. And Chloe, what is her name? I gotta look her up because I love her, but I never can remember her name. She's Hit Girl on, let's see, Chloe Grace Moretz. That's who it is. Chloe Grace Moretz, she plays the main female character, and she says that she has to go on this mission, but what she's really doing is trying to escape the Nazis, and she's also trying to get away from an abuser because she got pregnant with a kid that wasn't the abuser's kid. So she ends up on a plane, and this is a B-52 bomber, and she says, "I'm on a secret, top secret mission." And what she's trying to do is get her baby away from there, where the guy who got her pregnant is the one of the crew members on the B-52 bomber, and there's gremlins that show up. So it has like that Twilight Zone thing, gremlins in space, in the air. And it turns out to be a battle between not only the Nazis, but with the gremlins that are trying to destroy the plane. So a really cool show. Bad News Bears and Breaking Training. I watched that again. This is when Kelly takes the Bad News Bears to Houston for a tournament. And he meets up with his biological father, who turns into their coach. And when I first saw Bad News Bears, I saw Bad News Bears and Breaking Training before I saw Bad News Bears, and I loved it. Kelly is the same actor, I forget what his name is, that played Rorschach in the Watchmen movie, but he's much younger in the Bad News Bears. He plays like their star player. And then you got Tanner and all those different characters. Love that movie. We have a total of 33 comic books, so bear with me. That was a big week of comic books. We had one Xenoscope, one Scout, six Marvel, seven Image, one Fantagraphics, nine DC, two Dark Horse, one Boom, and five Aftershock. And good distribution of comic books. Just going to make sure the recorder is still working. I haven't checked it in a while. Yep, recorder still working. So we got the 2 out of 5. It was one that I didn't quite like. Bill Bomer picked it for Geek Brunch, and I just couldn't latch onto this book. And the more I thought about it, I still couldn't latch onto the book. And even usually when we discuss something, I might not have appreciated it, or Bill tells me something else, but this one I still don't appreciate. Broken Souls Ballad was from Scout. It's about deformed kids being hunted by an organization. One kid is half wolf and kills his adopted father and mother because they were abusive. Another kid manifests power when he has his friend, when he and his friends are being picked on by bullies. So we'll see how 2 goes and see if it changes my mind, because I did buy it. We got for 3 out of 5 is Let Them Live, number 6. This is the Ambush Bug hosted comic book that was digital only, where he is kind of like Cain or Abel from House of Secrets and House of Mystery, who documents the story, which is a inventory story, which usually means that it's a story where they put it in a file cabinet, and if the writer and artist can't come up with their stuff on time, they grab the things out of the folder and say, we're going to do this one shot because it's already done, and it keeps our comic book monthly. That's what this is, and it's an untold Titan's tale where Arrow teams with Crush to rescue a bunch of missing people from a haunted carnival. We then get into the 4 out of 5s. We had The Good Asian. It's a Chinese detective in San Francisco in the 1930s. Tries to help finding a missing Asian woman related to his past. We have Orphan and the Five Beasts, 1 and 2. Orphan's mentor sends him after the five evils he unleashed. The first being Thunder Thighs. We have X-Factor 2 and 5, continuing Krakoa X-Factor. And you got to remember that this X-Factor, they try to find missing or dead mutants and see if they could resurrect them, or they need to resurrect them, or they're just missing for another reason. They're still trying to find out what happened to Aurora. The team heads to Mojo World. That's where they witness the death of Wind Dancer. Atom X and Shadow Star are on Mojo World. Rockslide is resurrected, but has no memories because of the outcome of X of Swords tie-in. The resurrection chambers are destroyed and brought back on Krakoa, but things seem different during the resurrection. Wind Dancer is finally resurrected. We have Strange Adventures, number 6 through 10, written by Tom King. Did Atom kill the Pinkst? The Pixt, I don't know how to pronounce it, but they're an alien race that invaded Ran. And now are they seeking revenge by invading Earth? Alana questions Atom about the death of their daughter, Aaliyah. The mystery of her death continues, and Mr. Terrific has long walks with Alana and seems to know the truth, or something that's leading to the truth. So many flashbacks and switching with the present, it makes it a little tough to read from time to time. But the letter by Mr. Terrific to Alana makes it sound like Atom made a deal with the Pinkst to take Earth and leave Ran alone. So he's basically leading this alien race to destroy Earth. And the deal was, you can have Earth, but please leave Ran untouched. We'll see if that turns out to be true. And in exchange, they took Aaliyah, so she may not be dead. So they needed some kind of proof for that he was going to go through with this. So they took his daughter, but his wife doesn't know that. Sorry. We have X-Force number 18. This has something with Kid Omega's powers, and it's haunting members of X-Force. We have Artemis and the Assassin 3 through 5, Virginia Hall was providing war information to France for the Allies. She is a real life character if you look her up. The leader that sent Maya after Virginia is trying to change history and is responsible for killing her family. The two unite to take down the evil leader, and in the past she notifies the French so Hitler cannot win the war. A really fun series from Aftershock. Icon number 4, Rocket takes the pregnancy test and find out she is indeed pregnant. The reason she takes the pregnancy test is because in the previous issues, Icon says, "I think you're pregnant." And she's like, "Oh shit." But that was Icon 4. Yeah, Black Adam, Endless Winter Special number 1. Sebastian Stagg has the family frozen in the Fortress of Solitude Ice and is after it. Black Adam brings the team of Multiplex, Rampage, Catman, and Icicle to fight the Frost King. These guys were featured in the first issue of the Endless Winter. And then Black Adam freed them into his country. The Justice League arrives and the Frost King escapes. They regroup and find out where the real Frost King is and battle him and his constructs. Swamp Viking Prince takes on the big construct. Superman fights with Black Adam, and the Batman and Hippolyta try to get Frost King to stand down for his family. He does, and they put him in suspended animation until they figure out a way to revive the Frost King and his family together. A flashback shows how Black Adam was imprisoned by Shazam and Hippolyta. Multiplex may have been killed by the Frost King. We don't know. Look that way. And then that also was Justice League Endless Winter number 2. So I covered two issues there. Justice League Endless Winter number 2, Black Adam Endless Winter Special number 1. That we can then get to Grim Fairy Tales Terror Quarterly H.H. Holmes number 1. This was really good. Almost made a 5 out of 5. It would have made a 5 out of 5 if I would have realized that H.H. Holmes was a real life serial killer. But H.H. Holmes is a real life serial killer. In this book, he would kill people he was hosting in the 1800s in hotels. So he would bring people into the hotel and murder them in the hotel he invited them to. Now in the future, a twin owns a hotel and is doing the same to his guests and workers until the real H.H. Holmes comes back for revenge. And we learn the main female hotel security guard is the great granddaughter of H.H. Holmes. It was a really good series. Highly recommend that one by Xenoscope. Made in Korea number 1 is the last 4 out of 5. A scientist in Korea cracks the code to make an ultimate AI child in the future where adults can't have kids. A young couple gets the one child that has a special software in it, and he doesn't want his company to know that he cracked this code, but they own it. They feel like they own that because he invented this AI technology on company time. So we then jump into the 5 out of 5s, and there were a lot in that week. We have Red Room number 1. This is Ed Piskor from Fantagraphics. A police clerk loses his wife and kid early on in the book. One kid remains, but he has a dark secret and on the dark webs. He likes watching people die on the dark webs. He is recruited by an organization to torture people on the dark web because their ratings are going down. He was one remaining daughter and is now making enough money to send her to college by murdering and killing these people that look like people, but they're kind of like inbred people because they can't... This particular part of the Red Room, they don't have like real life looking people, but they have like a farm of people they just breed so they could torture on TV, and there's no traceability to these people because, nobody knows they exist. But Red Room was pretty damn incredible. I've already read number two and knocked my socks off again. Another 5 out of 5. Geiger 1 through 3. This is a story of a man that tries to get his family in the fallout shelter before a bomb goes off in Vegas. He survives and now protects that shelter in which his family died while he sacrificed himself outside. He basically threw his family into a protective shelter that he created when the nuclear bomb went off. He got hit by the nuclear bomb because two people tried to kill him and take his, protective house that he had created for themselves. So, Vegas is now divided into kingdoms, and one is led by the king, which is a villain of the story. Geiger makes short work of the king's face when he tries to take from him the facility that his family still might be embedded in. It takes place way in the future where he kind of lives by where he put his family. It's sort of like their gravestone. Two kids escape with a nuclear football, the president from the king, and King kills the mom. Geiger rescues the kid, and it shows the first flashback run in with Geiger and the king. The king looks to form an alliance with a woman in the Manhattan casino. So she's like, in this area, there's different owners of the casinos in Vegas, and they're sort of modeled after current Vegas. So you have like Caesar's Palace, New York, New York, Excalibur, all those different themes, and makes for a great story of characters and their domains. The Many Deaths of Lila Starr, number one. It's a story of God stating that there is no more need for death anymore now that a baby is born that will make humanity immortal. God sends death down to earth to be mortal because he's like, what use do I have for you anymore? She wants to kill the baby, which would give her job back, but when the opportunity arrives, she does not. As she is running from the hospital, worker get She gets hit by a vehicle and dies, so that's why it's called the Many Deaths. She comes back. She is brought back to life. Very good first issue. The next one, 5 out of 5. This one I didn't see coming. Like, this one I never guessed would have been the highest rated book for me personally. But it's Jules Verne's The Lighthouse from Image Comics, Top Cow, number 1 through 3. The lighthouse is a guiding facility between space wormholes. There is a group that is stationed there to keep things running, but a lot is automated. Like, they're just there for maintenance and to make sure things run and ships get from one universe to another. One day there is a pirate crew and they land and look to take over and capture a ship coming through with arms from a war where the lead female was a hero, she is now protected by a robot named Moses. She now works on that lighthouse. She teams up with a doctor. She is tried by the pirate group for disfiguring them in the past and sentenced to die by being hunted by them. Like, okay, so now they captured this woman from their past that works on this lighthouse, and now they seek revenge, and it's kind of like that movie The Hunt now. It's like, we're going to give you 10 steps to try to get away, and then we're going to hunt you and kill you. I really like this one, and that was from June 21st through June 27th. Against the 5 out of 5s were Red Room number 1, Geiger 1 through 3 from Image Comics. Red Room was from Fantagraphics. The Many Deaths of Lila Starr was from Boom Studios. Lighthouse, Jules Verne Lighthouse, was from Image Comics. That was 1 through 3. And the 5 out of 5 from Marvel was Marauders 1 through 18. I want to thank you for listening. Please send me questions because you see how it gives me a lot of things to talk about. If you don't send me questions, you get more colonoscopy talk. So you can reach me at mike@comicbooknoise.com. And on Twitter, I am at Mike Myers Brunch. You can go to Facebook and click on the Geek Brunch podcast and click the like button and follow all our episodes there, which feature Geek Brunch Retro, Geek Brunch, Mike M's Weekly Reads, Mike M's Collector's Corner, and others. And you can go to DC Noise podcast, click the like button and follow the episode threads there, or go to the website DCNoisePodcast.com, and you'll follow all the DC related podcasts there. I have DC Noise, which hasn't come out in a while, but I have DC Spotlight, which is pretty regularly, at least 2 a month, and the DC Everything Else podcast, which I have one to release now. I try to do that one every month, but it's more like every month and a half. So I want to thank you for listening. Thank you for your questions, Dallo Spicer, for that wonderful question. I want to thank Reed again. Those you went above and beyond to send a guy who loves comics, comic books to love. And I want to thank you, and then thanks to Aaron Myers for hooking me up again on some issues that I needed to, that I wanted. So thank you for listening. Be safe. COVID's kicking up again, so wear a mask to protect your kids who can't get a shot. Get a shot if you haven't gotten one. And let's try to get this thing under control again, because it's getting out of hand. Matter of fact, they did the mask mandate at work again. So we're back where we started, and hopefully it's not as bad as that first time, but it seems to be trending that way. So be safe out there. Love your family, keep them safe, and hope you have a wonderful day, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye, and enjoy your comics.